Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 124. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me. We are in Las Vegas.
Cole Coffee. Where are we at? Where are we at?
You know where we're at. You know where we're at on a thirsty Thursday in Las Vegas. We're at Boomers, but can we get the violin playing slowly?
Sad news.
Oh, it's the end of an era. Thirsty Thursday. Undergoing some changes.
Under some renovations.
No longer buy one, get one. It is now buy two get one. I mean, you know, I guess it goes from a 50% discount to a 33% discount.
Is that what the math is?
That's how I'm seeing it.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, it's not bad, but times are changing, man. It's the end of it. You know, the same thing happened at B-Dubs, which is my other spot.
Oh, no. Are you getting hit in two different places?
Tuesdays used to be traditional wing night. No longer. The cost of wings has gotten so high that now Tuesday and Thursday is just boneless night, which I don't really like boneless.
It's just a bunch of breading and stuff on there.
Yeah.
So what was the deal that it was? Like traditional what? What was the deal with it?
Well, years ago it was like 25-cent wings. Then it became like 35-cent wings, then 45-cent wings. And I think –
that's not even a deal.
Yeah. Recently it was buy one, get one free. That was theirs as well. So it was kind of, you know, a 50% discount. And now that's gone too. So I feel like, man.
So you were getting like 50% off two different nights a week?
Hell yeah. Well, just Tuesdays. Thursday was bonus night. Tuesday was –
well, no, but you were getting – buy one, get one free here.
Oh, yeah.
And you're getting buy one, get one free on Tuesday.
You know me, man. I'm always looking for the deal. I ain't
saving money.
I ain't a big baller like you, man. I'm a single income family. you know what I'm saying?
We're just rolling in it over at my house.
Big Bang Hank over there by the Palace Station.
The shadow of the Palace Station. That's a great neighborhood there.
Yeah, man. So it's the end of an era, man. Prices are changing. It's like somebody is trying to tell me to quit drinking so much beer and eating so much chicken wings and maybe get my ass in shape before I turn 40 years old.
Well, then if that was true, all of a sudden all the gyms would be like mad discounts to counter. Yeah, so it's not like it's just – they're just telling you maybe
– we got the expensive
maybe just
gym.
Cut back the wings a little bit.
Gym. Lifetime just
– dude, your gym's fucking gnarly.
It's nice, though.
But you also are going to incur another cost, which I don't know if I should unveil the thing – with your little man getting ready to enroll in some jiu-jitsu.
Monday, he is starting both kindergarten. The little five-year-old is going to school for the first time. Well, he's done some school. I shouldn't say first time.
But he's starting school and around the world
already.
Yeah,
that's true. He's done some school in Mexico. He's done some preschool here. But he's going to kindergarten. And at night, he is enrolling at Extreme Couture. Going to start doing some training there. Do a little bit of Muay Thai, a little bit of jiu-jitsu.
I like it.
He wants to learn, man. He sees me being around, you know, fights all the time. He comes in my office.
He sees you rolling on the ground doing the jiu-jitsu. He's like, I just want to do what dad does.
Definitely doesn't see that. Does not see me doing anything of the sort. But he wants to do it, man. He's got a bunch of energy.
That's awesome.
Know, I hold mitts for him with my hands, yeah. And he hits pretty hard.
That's good shit.
I was telling him, if somebody picks on him, you punch him right in the effing nose.
Right in the nose.
But they got to pick on you. Don't, you know, none of that.
Don't instigate it. Don't start it. I love it.
So
I love it.
Start. We took them by a couple gyms to take a look at that are in our area. Syndicate was there.
You took them to Syndicate. You took them around. And you were like, son, which gym? You know, this one's got winners. This one's got winners. How do you make the tough decision? What was it?
I don't know. He just liked Extreme Couture better. He liked
the layout. I mean, both of them are got cool layouts. Very, very different. So I wonder what a almost five-year-old kid would think.
I don't know what got him. He just said, you know, this is the one that feels comfortable to me. This is where I want to go. It's more expensive. Syndicate's actually pretty cheap.
Is it?
Yeah. Extreme Couture is not cheap. It's not as expensive as my other gym.
Yeah.
Where my wife does 2 days at Lifetime.
Well, let's be real. That's like a luxury gym. You guys got that fancy pool out there with like beach cabanas and nice indoor swimming pools.
And you can drink beer at the health club, which is what I love.
Yeah, so that's fancy. But, no, that's great. It was great to hear because, you know, Couture was one of the ones, too, and I had told you about – I was like, man, I'd love to start doing some jiu-jitsu classes, something just to get and improve the knowledge. You know, just – you know, I watch the sport, you know, a lot of times and I'm sitting there watching the moves and you pick up on things, but I've never actually – tried to do it, to actually practice it, to learn it. So I think that'd be a great thing to do. And then was hearing that Eli was going there, I was like, damn, now I really got to go or something. But it's just not cheap.
It's not cheap. I'll tell you what, I was this might work out good for us too, because if you do want to start going down there, because I had started talking to Robert Eli about
well, he's the one that I was thinking. Like, if I was going to go, I would want to go, and I think he does his classes during the day, like midday.
Well, I was talking about
like
doing some videos with him anyway.
Yeah. But I definitely want to do videos,
which I think would be fun. You know what I mean? Some kind of instructional type videos. Yeah. You know, we did a couple of them with Frost
I guess
the
that's
Hobby.
One way to learn it as well.
Well, remember when we did the videos of Frost the Hobby, a couple of breakdowns. Those are really cool. Now, we had a sponsor for those, and they were paying, and we were flying guys out to Montreal. This would be right in our backyard. But I thought those were fun, where he was like, listen, you know, if I was coaching John Jones against Daniel Cormier, here's what I do. And, you know, here's the move you need to look for, what you need to watch for. So I wanted to do some of that with Robert Follis anyway. So it worked out good that my kid said, I like Extreme Couture, because now we'll be in the gym a little bit more. Maybe we can set that up with all the spare time that you and I have.
Yeah, with so much spare time. But, no, that's good. And I guess that's one way to learn the sport as well, is just to have somebody – break down the moves. I mean, I still think it'd be good. My overweight ass to get on the mat. And I think there's nothing like learning it when you're actually getting fucking choked out and worked by somebody like a fraction of your size.
I tell you what, this is sad, but I'm kind of hoping that, because my kid's days are going to be full now, and I'm kind of hoping that his routine will become my routine.
Well, it makes sense if you're not on the road, and some of the evenings, unfortunately, our time frame for covering news and things, that it doesn't follow a 9-to-5 time frame. But I mean, it makes sense where if you had to maybe take him up to the gym and you have a couple hours where you're going to be there, more than likely you would probably be on a worktop
laptop anyway.
But it makes sense that if you were able to eke out an hour, you know, somewhere in there to actually get in there and roll, maybe they can get us a bulk deal for all three of us.
I could get a bulk deal by myself at this point. Like, bro, you need to lose some bulk.
Oh, well, I meant for just multiple people getting it. But all right, but enough of that.
All right, well, listen, the circus has begun, man. I, you know, maybe it doesn't feel this way for you because you were on the world tour, but earlier today, we spent the afternoon at the Mayweather gym, and even though we're 2 weeks out from the big fight, the money fight, The press events are already happening. And
hashtag the money fight.
That's right. And today was the Floyd Mayweather open workout / media session day.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, you went on the world tour. I didn't. So, you know, I helped process the video and I was helping cover it. So, I mean, I watched it. But you were there living it. So maybe you feel like it's already been going. But to me, I feel like today was like the official kickoff of this thing. Yes, the buildup has been going on. Yes, we've known about this. I mean, hell, we've been talking about it for you know, years now, it seems like, a year and a half anyway. But I feel like today was the official kickoff.
It definitely was a great, great start, and I could totally see that. But I feel like since they did have some stuff already, I felt like it was more of an oiled machine. Like, there was a lot of media there. There was a lot of crap going on. So for them to have that room set up where they had the print media, which some of the great footage that you were able to shoot that's already up on Junkie, and then they had the backdrop on the side wall, so when Floyd came from that, he went straight over to the media wall and did some broadcast media stuff there. And then you had the rest of us that were trying to, you know, post up around the one main ring where they always do the work, which he then walked past and went to the other ring. But that's a whole nother story. But it seemed like it was more oiled, and it felt like it was going. But when it came to getting around and getting that footage, and when you're seeing, you know, so many people. Gosh, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to wrap my head around how many people.
There's a ton of people there.
Yeah, like 100 people or whatever in a corner trying to shoot video. And everybody's shooting video around everybody. And you got multiple layers. That one person down on his knees shooting. Got somebody over his shoulder shooting it. And somebody above their head shooting it. And somebody even over that with, you know, some extended camera like myself just trying to get a shot. He would just go from one place to another place, and he would use his bodyguards to sort of, like, open it up so that they would make way over to the speed bag and then back over to the heavy bag. And it wasn't like there was just open. You had to, like, clear, part the sea to make moves and stuff. And it was just crazy. And it seemed like it went better than I thought it would. Like, if that was the very first event, it felt more like it was they were ready to go for it.
Yeah, like they had some practice.
Yeah, like they had some practice, you know, like they were expecting it or whatever. But, I mean, granted, they've done these Mayweather things over and over and over and over, but this was the most I've ever seen. In fact, I was hearing some sort of veteran photogs and stuff sort of bitching and moaning about how there were so many people, but also about how he was kind of doing the same sort of thing. You know, he'd go from the heavy bag over to, I'm not sure what the little bag is, it's extended from top to bottom, and it's kind of more of like a finesse. Rondo used to always work out, right, and you would see it. I'm not sure what the fuck it's called, but he would go to that, and he would go to a different heavy bag, and then back again. And after you get so many shots of the same sort of thing, then you're just reduplicating it. And then I'd even hear them bitching about, oh, you know, there's so many people trying
Floyd
to get
puts
this.
In a workout.
Just doing, he put in a legit
and this is
workout.
This is traditional. When Floyd works out, we'll get to that in just a second. Let's say this. A couple things I want to get to. First, I should say, Connor was supposed to work out Wednesday.
Yeah.
He switched it to Friday. So we'll actually be at the UFC Performance
Institute. Well, there was a scheduling
Institute.
Conflict.
Well, there was. And I happened to be around some UFC staff members, you know, mm-hmm. and I asked because I thought maybe it was a, you know, a little power play, a little, nah, I'm going to let you get your stuff done first, then I'm going to go so I have a chance to respond to everything. You know, I thought maybe there was some kind of little gamesmanship there, but I was told by multiple people, believe it or not, it really just didn't work out with the way, like, he has his scheduling routine, like, so dialed in of how mm-hmm. he's doing things right now that it worked better for him to be on Friday than to Wednesday.
But you didn't think they checked that out before they put that out?
I'm just telling you, man. That's the intel I was given. I feel like Connor's
I guess I'll play devil's advocate.
Yeah,
Of like, I mean, you figure before these guys put this out, they're going to double check and make sure that it's good to go. So I don't, you know, what –
No,
really
I kind of see where you're coming because
you know?
I feel like Connor is so calculated.
I mean, I get it if something's like, oh, hey, something came up with a kid, whatever, you know, I can't do it. Can we possibly move it?
Right.
If there was some sort of unexpected sort of thing that they can't plan for. But if it's just like, oh, I'm so in tune with my schedule. This is what I do. You know, it's like you don't think
he
would have said
that ahead of time.
Ahead of time when they planned the days?
I mean, they did wait forever to get it together.
Forever. I mean, shoot, they put out this morning the list of the undercard guys that we were going to see hours later.
That's ridiculous, by the way.
That's fucking crazy.
The boxing bouts were literally announced this morning. Yeah. 2 weeks away from the fight, we finally found out what else is on the card.
It was crazy.
And not that it really means a whole lot to us. I mean, we're there to cover one fight, right? We're not covering boxing, really. We're there to cover Conor McGregor.
I'm there to cover boxing,
but
baby.
You still like to know, right?
You
still want to
know.
What's
I mean,
in
like,
there.
I feel like an idiot. Like, we're getting ready to go, and I wanted to at least be able to see – like, study the guys to a degree. I want to see what they look like. I want to know who I'm looking at. There's other boxers there in the gym at the same time. Do I shoot everybody?
Yeah.
Do I just pan the room nonstop? But it's like, you know, so I had to look the thing. So it's like when they finally gave the list, then I was like, okay, cramming. So I was even sending you, images like as a little cheat sheet.
Yeah.
Like, these are the people that we need to look for, you know, because I have no idea.
And
who
I've
these
only covered
are.
A handful of boxing events, but it was like that every single time. Like the fights on the preliminaries weren't, and not even just the preliminaries. I mean, the main card fights weren't announced until, you know, 1 or 2 weeks out. I just find that I don't. It just seems weird to me.
It
seems kind of counterproductive.
Because I mean, I think anytime, especially when we think about what a commission needs to do the right things before a fighter's going to get in there, testing, all that other stuff. Shouldn't that shit happen a while back? You can't fucking, at least from what I've seen, like, all right, we're going to announce a fight. It's official. I mean, and then go get the testing. So you figure they already know what's going on. The guys, I'm sure, are going and getting the testing stuff. But actually, now I take that back because the guy I was speaking to, one of the boxing sort of money managers of one of the fighters, I'll just go ahead and leave his name out, was talking about, and he was saying, we were waiting for this thing to finally get fleshed out and settled out. I was like, yeah, I mean, that got to be tough to, like, wait to say what was going on until they finally gave the okay. And he was like, no, like, I forgot about this. He was like, no, we were literally still kind of waiting because talking to one guy and he wasn't quite sure it was going to happen. Talking to another guy, it was still going to, you know, wasn't going to happen.
So
and then
ridiculous.
It finally happened. So I think they were still kind of waiting as well, which is crazy because we're 2 weeks out.
Yeah, I mean,
Leonard Ellerbe
apologized. He's the CEO of Mayweather Productions, or Mayweather Promotions, I should say. He apologized backstage when he was talking to us. You know, he's like, ah, sorry it took so long to get everything together.
He'd apologize to the damn fighters.
Yeah, right?
You know,
that's
like, screw the media. We can get along with it. But, like, if you're a fighter and you're still like, am I on this card? Am I not on this card?
Well, and they say, you know, boxing is having a problem building stars. Well, hey, maybe if people knew more than 2 weeks out who was fighting.
You could build up on them.
So I found that ridiculous.
Yep. You're right. That's
this,
a big point.
This was at the Mayweather gym. I guess just to throw it out there for anybody that doesn't know, that maybe if you're in Vegas or whatever, it is a not small gym. It's not a huge gym.
No, it's not a big gym
at all. It's in the back of Chinatown off of Spring Mountain and Valley View. It is open to the public. You can go in there if you want. It's tucked away, but the address isn't hidden. It's not. I mean, there's plenty of signage on the building, so they're not trying to hide it, and they do let people go in there. It was set up a little bit different today, but normally they have some chairs or whatever. I don't know if they have, like, gear and stuff you can buy, but you can at least go in there and take some pictures and stuff like that.
No, because somebody, I think, was out front asking about that today. I don't know if you overheard her. She was trying to pick up some team money gear, and I can't remember if they told her that they didn't have anything there. You figure they would have something, but it's a small spot. They don't really have warehousing there. They got to have it probably somewhere else where it handles that sort of thing. But there was a woman that was out front asking about trying to get some
gear.
So
they don't have a gear. But you can at least go in there.
Yeah, you can at least go in and look. And you never know. Maybe they have some gear, but are they going to have, you know, every size and color that you probably want? Probably not.
But maybe somebody will give you their sweaty T-shirt when they're done. It is always hot in there, especially when Floyd's there. Floyd likes it hot. Of course, it was summer today.
Bizarre.
It was incredibly hot today. We got really lucky because originally the print media was supposed to be set up outside in a tent, but the tent wasn't set up. When we got there, and they said, you know what? F the tent. It's too hot. Let's just bring you guys inside. So that worked out okay. So
yeah, y'all got lucky with that one.
We did. So I had it a lot easier than you did. You and I got there first. We were first in line. That's how MMA Junkie does. You know, we go, first ones in, last to leave. That's the only way you get the nice setup and the nice spots.
we kind of got screwed on
we
that.
We did get a little bit screwed up, but we made it work. But I got to set up in the print room. It was funny because they originally said no cameras in here, and I was like, well, you know, it's not like we're going to just do the cameras. We're going to write stories, too. And they're like, all right, cool. So that worked out great because we got a half hour with Floyd Mayweather. We got 45 minutes with Leonard Ellerbe, again, the CEO of Mayweather Promotions. Those are both. I've got the entire archive on YouTube right now. So if you want to go watch the entire sessions or kind of scan through them a little bit, they are there. And, of course, you put up a little summary as well. We put up a bunch of little tiny stories. Mm-hmm. But so the workout itself – give me your impressions. What did you think, man? Because Floyd is known for doing full workouts. When he comes in, he doesn't do the Dan Henderson. You know, he comes in, he puts
The recent John Jones.
Yeah, he puts in 60 minutes, 90 minutes. He always has the gym extra hot. He likes to get a good sweat in. And he puts in a good workout. So knowing the man is 40 years old, knowing that he hasn't fought in a couple years, knowing what's going on here – what'd you think?
I thought it looked good. I mean, granted, it wasn't a super high-intensity workout. I mean, he never hit mitts, but he did a nice little warm-up. Then he went to the heavy bag, did some work on that. I mean, that was good. I mean, was he going 100% on it? Heck no. But, I mean, he worked it, moved around, had some fun with that. Had a guy next to him that had the little body shield on, so he was doing some work on that. Went over, did a little speed bag. But he looked good. But, I mean, it wasn't like – I didn't feel like I was getting 110%, but I felt like he was doing a workout. But, like that, like you would see leading up, you know, somebody that was trying to get a good workout but not trying to – like was still sort of pacing himself to peak later on. Like he didn't want to expend too much energy because he was probably going to do the same sort of workout or maybe more intense tomorrow or something. But I thought he looked good. I mean, his work on the bags, I mean, he looked like what you would think a guy that's been doing it for as long as he has been.
He's at 40 years old. I mean, he definitely, now at 39, I'm not the right guy to be saying what a normal 40-year-old looks like.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's definitely still in peak physical condition. He's a guy that, despite living as rich as he has, you know, has never been one to party in terms of damaging his body with drugs or alcohol.
That's just a waste of time, man.
What kind of life is that?
Jeez, Floyd, all the money you have.
You get some great drugs and alcohol.
Something.
But he looks good. He looks good. I mean, we've seen him together. I mean, you especially saw him together on the World Tour. Now, we know that Floyd Mayweather was kind of wearing some, what do you call them? Not platform shoes, but he had like some wedges in his heels or whatever just to step up
to
a little
boost
bit.
His height up a
yeah,
little
but,
bit.
Yeah, but. I mean, standing next to him today and, you know, having stood next to Conor as many times as we have, I mean, there's no doubt he's the smaller guy, man. It's just and not just in terms of height. I mean, just in terms of, like, bone density and, like,
sure.
size. I mean, there is no question about it. He's a smaller man. And, you know, being as close as we were to him today, that was definitely kind of – not that I didn't know that going in, but it was just kind of like strengthened in my mind, like how much different in size they really are.
Right.
And all those things that they say about him being older and him being away, I mean, yes, part of it's marketing and part of it's kind of sandbagging a little bit and trying to, you know, set up why this is a tougher fight for him than people think. And I still think, you know – Floyd wins this fight. I really do. I have a hard time picking Conor McGregor in this fight.
Yeah.
But today, it does remind you that, hang on, you know, these really are, I don't want to say two different size athletes, but I do think there's a pretty stark difference between them.
There really, really is. And what's interesting, though, is that, I mean, we've always seen it in the guys, like the bigger athletes, the stronger ones, the guys that come with these big physiques. Not that I'm trying to say, like, you know, Conor's like a Yoel Romero or one of these guys that you think that typically tires out. But we did see that the first time that he fought Nate Diaz, when he fought a bigger guy, he expended a lot of energy and he tired himself out. And this is a guy in Floyd Mayweather, which is used to going at a very, very fast, high pace for a long, long time.
Right.
And that's the kind of stuff that, I mean, while Conor is in incredible shape, it comes down to that. Just, I don't know if he can keep that speed when it comes to just even the hands, just working the hands at a constant speed level of what's going to be and exerting that much energy only in his arms. He's used to being able to work his arms, take a break with the arms, work the kick, work into a clinch, work other body parts, and then get back to, you know, working his aims, give him a little bit of break. Floyd is used to going full rounds nonstop with just the hands over and over and over and over.
How many times did he hit that heavy bag?
A lot.
Like literally hundreds of times in a row.
A lot.
That's a great point. I don't think people have thought about, you know, people are like, can Conor keep up the pace? And it almost sounds like you're kind of putting him down. Like, hold on, this guy's fought 25 minutes, but yeah. What you're saying is right. No, not does he have energy, can he go? Can he the arms.
It's the arms. I mean, and I think Conor's he's stronger. And it's one thing, I think that's what I think maybe some of the work is, and that's what always used to drive me crazy about some boxing is with guys when they're looking for that break, they come in and they get the clinch. Mm-hmm. Part of that clinch, one, is to control your opponent's arms, but also you're giving your arms a little bit of a break. You got to kind of watch it, though, because, you know, depending on how old you do it, you let those acids, lactic acids build up in there, and you got to work that out. And I think that's the kind of stuff that you don't get used to or work out how to get that out of you until you box the amount of boxing that someone like Floyd or these guys that have been doing boxing for years and years and years. They know the tricks to the trade when the arm starts getting tired, how to do something to where they can work their arms free and get some more out of it. And I think that's different than just being able to go in there and go five rounds of 5 minutes and going solid, because it's they're not just doing the boxing. And it's not – it's tough because, I mean, if Conor – I think it's in his best interest to do as much damage as possible early to try to slow down – Floyd, just for the fact that he's so used to going deep in. But on the counterpoint, Floyd is be fighting a guy that's a bigger, stronger guy. If he does a lot of damage, it doesn't matter if you got cardio for days. If you take a lot of initial damage, that's going to take your cardio right out the window. And then it's going to be a matter of survival. And then once Conor, you know, we see him when he wounds somebody, he's like a killer.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he gets that extra adrenaline dump, and then it just lights out for whoever's in there, you know. So I think his best interest is to go in and make some moves right from the get-go and just clinch him, hit him, wrap him up, squeeze fucking his arms, you know, squeeze Floyd's arm, try to wear Floyd's arms out so that those arms get fatigued sooner than they would. I mean, he's used to going deep, deep rounds, but if he could find some way to fatigue him, clinch him, fucking punch the arms while you're there. Do something along those lines just to lessen what Floyd's been able to do for so long. And then I think Conor's got a chance. But if it just is, man, I'm going to sit back and just, for the pure sport of boxing, I'm just going to put two dukes up and go. It's going to be tough, and I don't think it would work.
I think
so, too. He's going to have a game plan to take those strong points away from Floyd. I think his main goal is going to try to advance Floyd. So how can he make it be a 10-round or 12-round Floyd that you normally see, but in the second and third rounds? How can he push that timetable forward?
I really do think the first rounds are interesting. I was talking to Kevin Ioli today, and Kevin is pretty clear. You know, he's not against the fight. He gets it. You know, there's some people who are like, oh, this fight shouldn't even be happening. Kevin's not against the fight. He gets it. You know, it's a spectacle. It's going to generate a lot of money, a lot of attention. But he also feels very strongly that Floyd Mayweather wins this thing, you know, 999 times out of 1,000.
I think Ioli would get a lot of heat, though, if he ever said anything different, though.
Well, but so –
But I agree.
You may be right,
because
he has deep roots in boxing.
He's got
huge
roots. I think people would think he's stabbing him in the back regardless.
Well, he seems to be, you know, just talking to him kind of off record, he seems to have pretty strong convictions about that's the way he feels the fight's going to go. But he kind of asked me while we were sitting there waiting for things to get started. And I'll say, man, I am intrigued by at least the first couple rounds. You know, how many times have we sat down and watched a fight of any kind whatsoever where you really have no idea what to expect out of at least one of the competitors? You know, I guess James Toney and Randy Couture was kind of one of those fights, and, you know, Toney ended up kind of embarrassing himself in that fight, to be honest with you. I think he embarrassed himself the day before when he got on the scales and we realized he wasn't taking things very seriously.
Yeah.
But that's not going to be the case here for sure. I mean, these two guys are definitely taking it seriously. But I'm really intrigued by the fact that, you know, I don't know what I'm going to see exactly. Floyd definitely doesn't know what he's going to see.
Yep.
And I do think that is Connor's opportunity in the very early rounds. I mean, one-punch knockout, tough to say, you know. But it's tough to do with boxing gloves on. But I do think it's incredibly intriguing those first couple rounds. The stories that have been kind of – let's talk about a couple of stories. I want to ask you if you're intrigued or not. This Pauly Malignaggi stuff. I kind of feel the same way, right? Like
I get it. It's another. I see it as a sideshow spectacle. It's weird that the guy is now going to have to go in there and call the show or help provide commentary. I think it's just kind of weird. I almost feel like he should have, if he was taking that gig to be a partner, maybe step away from the gig, but that's another gig.
I thought it was
nobody
cool.
wants to step.
Well,
you know,
the beginning,
step away from
I thought it was
money.
Cool. I was like, how cool would that be that on the broadcast you'll have one guy that knows exactly what the preparation was, that knows exactly what, you know, Connor worked on, what was working, what wasn't. I thought it was going to be kind of cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah, now that it's gone down the way it has, now I'm like, how can I expect you to give me a fair and unbiased call?
I wouldn't be surprised if Connor behind the scenes isn't trying to get him removed from it, just to say, like, I don't think I'm going to get a fair shake, remove him from the commentary team. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets removed at this point.
Wow. That'd be crazy. Because he's good.
He is good, but I mean, but you don't think they can replace him? And this guy that's maybe is already too tight, too close to the story.
It is.
And kind of tainted. You know, I would think that he'd be removed. But I don't know. It's not my call. But I mean, if it was a UFC guy, he'd be gone already. But the only thing that's keeping him right now, it's because it's a Showtime guy. And right now, you know, with what's his face from Showtime, Steven... what the fuck his name
is. Espinoza.
The
weasel.
The weasel. The fucking weasel. He might try to keep him on. But I just think that there might be some heat. So I wouldn't be surprised if he got removed from it just for the fact of he probably shouldn't have taken on the role of being a sparring partner.
You think Malignaggi, I mean, we don't know exactly how things went down or whatever. Of course, we've heard, you know, different sides. But do you I don't know. I feel like Malignaggi is using this to try to, like, set a future fight with Connor up if he can. I honestly feel like he's trying to use this to his advantage as much as he can.
Or at least stay relevant in the scene or something as an active player or whatever.
I mean, the
guy hasn't fought in, what, years, right?
No, it's been about a year.
Has it? I mean, I don't know. I don't think anybody gives a fuck about – I mean, I could see him trying to do a fight. I don't think it's ever got to any heat where it's just like, who cares? Because I thought the whole fact of how they got together was because Connor was like, who's this guy that's, like, trying to say whatever, you know? So, I don't know. I certainly don't have any interest to see that one.
Yeah, me neither.
But
here's
the story. But it's just been kind of a weird little thing.
Here's a story I do find interesting, this glove size stuff. And this is interesting, too, because I thought this was a non-story. You know, I thought initially when they're like, we'll use this, and it's like, well, no, you can't. That's the rules. And now we find out that next week the NSAC is willing to at least hear it out, is willing to make a decision on it. And I am pretty interested in this because I really do feel like an 8-ounce glove would favor Conor McGregor. I mean,
sure.
we brought it up today, and both Mayweather and LRB kind of laughed at us a little bit, and we're like, ah, what are you talking about? You know, it favors me just as much as him. You guys think he's the knockout artist, the guy with the power. You know, you don't know me. But, I mean, when we're basically saying that nobody – I mean, I haven't heard anybody that says – Conor McGregor is going to outbox Floyd Mayweather for 12 rounds. Nobody
right.
says that, right? You just say Conor McGregor can land that left hand. And if you could take an extra 2 ounces of padding out of the glove, it does seem to favor him. But Floyd seems all about this. And initially, I thought it was posturing. I thought it was just saying something that he knows can't come true. And it makes him look like he's this super tough, you know, great guy. And
yeah.
maybe it still can't come true. But at least the fact that it's going before the NSAC – I'm actually pretty interested in this. I don't know that it necessarily changes my opinion on what I think the outcome will be, but I find it interesting, and I find it interesting that Floyd is the one that seems to be, like, pushing for this.
Well, I mean, if anything else, I mean, I think it's a dumb move because I think it does favor McGregor. If anything else, the only thing it does is gives Mayweather an out if he gets knocked the fuck out. It's like, oh, I shouldn't have agreed to use 8-ounce gloves. It was a miscalculation on my part.
That's an interesting point.
You know, he's a younger, stronger guy. I should have stuck. I mean, has he ever fought in 8-ounce gloves? And if he has, I'm sure it hasn't been any fucking time. The way he throws his punches, the way he works bags, the way he's been training, he doesn't train with an 8-ounce glove. Why would he want to try to throw that out in the most important time?
Yeah, no, he's definitely, because he's competed at lower weight classes, so he definitely has. And he's not a knockout artist, but the thing is, I mean, he has those. I mean, hell, even Ellerby was saying today he's got small hands. He's got, you know, he doesn't have big hands. He's had hand issues.
Why hasn't he been fighting with different size gloves for forever then? If it's about his glove size, it just seems to me like it'd be setting up a point so that if he gets knocked the fuck out, he's got an excuse. And it doesn't, even if he doesn't get knocked the fuck out, if he thinks that Connor's lasting longer and Connor's doing more damage, I think it favors Connor incredibly because I think Connor, if he does really try to go and push the pace, he's going to be doing more damage with that because it's going to be more along the lines of what Connor's used to fighting with. I think, if anything else, Connor's going to feel less cumbersome with this giant balloon on his fist as opposed to an 8-ounce glove. I mean, granted, it's not 4-ounce gloves or whatever,
right.
but it's certainly closer.
It is.
2 ounces closer.
I'm interested to see. I mean, I could see maybe the NSAC.
I don't think they're going to agree.
You don't think they'll waive it?
I think it's just maybe he was just like, hey, can we just put up there? And I know you guys are going to deny it. Deny it for me.
I mean, yeah.
But let's just say this. I mean,
it's great. It's just a storyline, right? I mean, the dude knows how to get pressed. The dude knows how to.
It certainly gets people talking about it. I mean, it makes it more exciting in the sense where I'm like, oh, okay, now I'm really starting to maybe lean the other way. You know, shoot, maybe it's just gets gamblers. It seems like something gamblers would be like all over that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just like, oh, because then I think it really does change it. I mean, it's not just – I mean,
he says that, look, he wants to eliminate any excuses Connor might have, you know, and try to accommodate Connor.
It's giving him an excuse if he gets knocked the fuck out.
Man.
Like, I shouldn't have done the gloves. I shouldn't have done the gloves. I'm a 40-year-old man. I just don't hit like – I can't take a punch like I used to.
I'm interested. I'm really interested in the storyline. I can, and you know what I can see?
Thank you.
Thank you for another round of beautiful frosty beverages here. We've now each bought two and can get one free.
Yes.
I don't know.
Bought two. My first one was free. Tonight I just bought one.
I could totally see the NSAC just blowing it off and saying no. But, I mean, like, even for them to hear it, like, it makes me think they're at least considering it. But, I mean, at least it gets them pressed, too, and it gets them, you know. I don't know. I'm interested. I'm way more interested by the glove size story than I am about any Pauly Malignaggi story.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right, well, listen,
for sure.
Since we do have these fresh, frosty beverages right here, I want to enjoy a sip or two of this. And, you know, I would never do that on air because that would just be rude.
We don't do that.
So here, what I want to do is I want to play a couple minutes of the audio from Floyd Mayweather today. Again, if you want to listen to the whole thing, we had right at a half hour. The entire archive is up on YouTube. You can check that out there. But I just simmered it down to a couple minutes of basically my questions and a couple questions from people near me that I thought were good. I think you heard a little Kevin Ioli in here, a little Scott Peterson, some familiar faces and some familiar names. And hear a little bit from the former five-time world champion, the undefeated Floyd Money Mayweather.
I think the theory is that he'll be most dangerous in the opening rounds because, and part of that being that you don't know exactly what to expect. Do you buy into that, that's the most dangerous time for you, not knowing what you're going to see on the other side?
I'm going to see a warrior. I know what I'm going to see. I'm going to see a fighter. I'm going to see a warrior. You know, like I spoke on yesterday, when I done an interview yesterday, it was a great thing that Joe Cortez was able to go into his training camp so he can learn, you know, about the rules, the Queensberry rules of boxing. I think it was a great thing. You know.
What did you make of Conor? I mean, you probably spent more time and saw more of him at the World Tour than you ever had before. What were your impressions?
He's a fighter. He's a warrior. And, you know, that's really it. I couldn't really, you know, it's not for me to worry about, you know, what he do on a day-to-day basis. I mean, how he fights, I have to worry about what I have to go out there and do. But I know I'm not going to overlook him, and that's why I've been in the gym, you know, pushing myself and working extremely hard.
What if it turns out he is overmatched? Do you feel like there'll be a responsibility on you to carry him a little bit to put on a show if you are outclassing him?
We'll just have to see once we get to that square circle, you know. My job is to go out there and execute the game plan. And like I said, I can't overlook any opponent. Even if it's Conor McGregor, I can't overlook anyone.
Nate Jones said there's been some acknowledgement to the fact that he may come at you, like he was saying in the early rounds, and that you may be fighting, you know, for maybe the first time in a long time, like a real toe-to-toe type war.
We'll just see. You know, I can't really say. As this, you know, what's so crazy is that we always have our teammates and everyone on his, you have people on his side communicating and saying certain things. Have people on my side communicating and saying certain things. But when it's all said and done, it comes down to the two competitors. You know, it comes down to the two fighters, the two warriors. You know, my dad can give me a brilliant game plan, but he can't fight. I mean, he can't get in there and fight for me. Same goes for Conor McGregor and his team. His team can't fight for him. So when it's all said and done, you can have the crowd going for me. The crowd can be pro McGregor, but when it comes down to the two combatants.
The effects of age, how has that affected your training?
Age, rest. I think it's more rest. You know, older, you know, with age comes wisdom. So I think that it's very important to let the body rest. Whereas when I was a lot younger, I would train, and never let the body recoup. Whereas I'm older and I can train 2 or 3 days, let the body rest a couple days. Still doing cardio work, but still letting the body rest. So when I do come back from resting 2 days, I come back rejuvenated and with a lot more spark.
Floyd, I wanted to ask you, I read an article that Zab Judah commented, and he said when you get ready to fight somebody, you read their background, you study their family and all this stuff. Why do you do that? What do you get out of that that helps you in the ring?
I really, it's about doing your homework, you know, like being like with Zab. It's not really watching fight tapes. It's really just knowing the person that you're facing that's across the ring from you. You want to know what that person likes to eat. You want to know what that person is doing when they're not in training camp. You know, if they're drinking, how much they're drinking, who they're hanging out with. Those are the things that you want to know. That's called really doing your due diligence and your homework on the opponent, not just watching film and fight tapes.
Well, I understand that, but what benefit does it give you in the ring to have that information? So if you know that I'm eating pizza, and I know, you know, I never hardly ever do, but just say that.
I do.
Like, how does that information help you? How do you process that and turn it into something that helps you in the ring?
Even like right now, I know how much Conor McGregor is down to him. His weight. He's down. He's down. I think he was a little bit heavy. I think he's at 160 now. So he's down. And I mean, I know what's going on.
Did you speak to Paulie?
I don't have to worry about speaking to Paulie. Paulie's, one thing about Paulie, I commend Paulie for going to camp and trying to help Conor. Of course, trying to help him step his game up to the next level. That's what it's about. You know, giving him that extra boost, and I'm glad that Paulie went to camp to help McGregor. And I think Paulie was, you know, for the tools that Paulie had, he wasn't a heavy, heavy puncher, but for him to become two-time world champion, he had to be a hell of a fighter.
Floyd, how is finding a southpaw different for you in terms of preparation? People have said that you struggle with southpaws, but you might have lost one.
So. Well, last time I checked, I was undefeated against, whether you was orthodox or southpaw, I was undefeated against you. So everybody can talk to their own opinion.
How is it different in preparation, though, when you're fighting someone with a different style?
A fighter is a fighter. It doesn't matter. You know, with McGregor, he looks to come out. He's going to come out. And you're going to keep switching. He's going to keep switching. I know what he's going to do. I already know.
Sorry,
like I said before, I already know what you're going to do. You're going to come out. You're going to come out southpaw, then the other way. You're going to keep switching. But when you keep switching, all you're doing is burning energy. So let me give him some. Let me give him a lung. Let me give him some knowledge so that he can see. Huh. Look, as you keep switching, you're burning too much energy.
If you get the 8-ounce or the 10-ounce gloves, do you still do you predict a knockout?
If he's going, I'm saying that he believes that it's not going to go past four, and I believe that it's not going to go the distance at all. So he feels one way, I feel another way. We're both confident in our skills, and we'll just have to see.
Do you have to finish him for this to feel like a win for you? Because I've heard some people say if he goes the distance, that's a victory for him.
It is a victory for him. If he goes the distance, it's a victory for him. And my eyes are awesome.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Floyd Money Mayweather. Like I said, if you want to see the whole thing, there's about 30 minutes of discussion. We got the whole thing up on the MMA Junkie YouTube account, which has gotten a lot more kind of useful in recent times. It used to just be, I mean, hell, for years it just was there. We just
weren't paying attention to it.
I mean, we had it. We didn't do shit with it.
That was our own fault.
It was our own fault.
We should have been more on that, but. You know, that's the kind of thing where we're so caught up in just doing the day-to-day things that you have to do to get the site going, to get the other stuff, that the other stuff is just like, you know, just without the forethought to think about it, you know. It's just like, it's just off to the side. Like, you know.
We missed the boat. We dropped the ball. We did miss it,
but we've been working to definitely remedy that.
And it's cool because now, again, a lot of stuff like these archives, it's not even going to the site. So if you want to watch the whole thing, it's not even on MMA Junkie. It's just on the YouTube site. And a lot of times, too, you know, we've kind of talked internally and we said, listen, we might not have time to get a story up on the site, but let's go ahead and let the video get out. So a lot of times you can get stuff that we're covering and you can actually get it quicker on YouTube than you can on actual MMA Junkie. So kind of cool. So just something there if you're a YouTuber.
You're probably a YouTuber.
Give us a subscription there. Should also say, too, if you like what you're hearing in terms of the MMA Roadshow, do us a favor. Go in there. Give us a little – go into iTunes. Give us a little a like. Subscribe, of course. You know,
if there's a love button, you can put a love button.
Yeah, if you can love versus like, do whatever you got to do. Leave us a little review. I always like a little feedback. I'm even okay for a little constructive criticism every now and then. Cold coffee doesn't like it quite as much, but I'm okay. I would prefer you just say that we're awesome and we're cool people and give us a shout out. That would be great. But you know, we'll take a little constructive criticism as well. So
I'll take it with a shot of liquor and make myself feel better afterwards.
It does. Yep, we're doing it. All right, listen. So let's talk about Floyd Mayweather right there. One of the big things, the takeaway of the whole day in the conversation with Floyd Mayweather was, you know, I did ask him. Is this a victory for Conor McGregor if he makes it to the judge's decision? Because a lot of people say that it is. And he basically came out and said, well, not basically, he did. He came out and said, yeah, I see this as a victory for Conor McGregor if I don't knock him out. And Cold Coffee, what's weird is I feel like it's refreshing honesty. I feel like he does feel this way maybe, or I think at least the rest of the world does. I mean, I feel like if Conor McGregor makes it to the judge's decision, assuming he didn't embarrass himself on the course of 12 rounds to get there, I feel like it is a little bit of a moral victory to say, hey, man, I came in here at 0-0, took on one of the greatest to ever do it, and I came up short, but damn it, I pressed him all the way to the end, especially if he can pick up a couple rounds along the way, which wouldn't shock me if he picked up a couple rounds, especially early. So I don't know. I guess, A, were you maybe as surprised as I was to hear Floyd say this, and B, knowing that we don't follow Floyd on a daily basis, you know, we're not Floyd historians. Can you guess a reason as to why he might be willing to say this? Because I feel like all he did was add pressure to himself.
Yeah, and I think he does. But, you know, honestly, I think we see more and more of Floyd that, I mean, this is one, this is a different Floyd than what used to be. And I think even though he says maybe there is a chance for a decision, but and he talks about how he's going to finish him, this is not the Floyd that used to finish guys. I don't remember the last time I saw Floyd finish a guy. I almost just assume everything's going to go to a decision. I assumed when this first came out that this was going to go to a decision. Right. If Connor doesn't get the finish, which I almost feel like, you know, everybody would look at me crazy if I'm going to say, you know, Connor's going to get that knockout. But Connor's got that power. If Connor can do something, I could see something happening. But I could also see on Floyd's side, this is the kind of guy that, like Connor, visualizes things. He says things. So maybe in his head, if he's thinking, well, I'm going to knock out this guy. I'm saying it. I believe it wholeheartedly. I'm going to do it. And then by some chance that I can't do it and Connor makes it to a decision, then that's a win for Connor because I believe so much that I'm going to get the finish. I'm going to get the knockout. But I don't know. It just – that's how I see it going to happen. Yeah. So when I hear him saying, I'm thinking like, you're finally agreeing. You're finally saying possibly what everybody else is saying, that it's going to go to another fucking decision. And maybe – I don't know. I think at some point in his head when he's watching his past fights, he's got to be like, man, why am I not finishing guys? I'm not finishing guys. And I think in his head, he maybe has all these people off to the side saying, like, he ain't a boxer, Floyd. He ain't deserving to be in there with you, Floyd. He ain't going to last, Floyd. And Floyd's like, yeah, you're right. You're right. He doesn't deserve to be in there. He's not a boxer. He doesn't have the skills. Man, if he makes it to a decision, that's a win for him. Even though, deep down inside, he should be thinking, all my last fights have went to decision. You know, like.
Yeah, from the beginning, I mean, from the time this fight was first discussed, I thought Floyd by decision. I thought right. That's how the fight ends. I mean,
right.
In my head, here's how this fight goes. It comes out, and the first couple rounds are really wild. Connor's aggressive. He's talking shit. He's showboating a little bit. He may land a left hand or two, you know, even if
– with that little quick uppercut that he does.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fun. And I think maybe he banks a round or two early on because Floyd's doesn't know what to expect. He's studying. He's staying back. He doesn't want to expose himself. So he's the one moving backwards.
He better
backwards,
be staying back. Because if he's cocky and he's just like sticking his chin out there like, oh, you ain't got the speed to hit me, he's going to get fucking jacked.
I agree. And that's why when they say, you know, he's going to come out aggressive, I disagree. I don't
that
think
would be so stupid.
So I think the first couple rounds like that. And then after a while, I think it starts to settle into the rhythm. Floyd is Floyd.
Yeah.
He's a genius. He's an incredible boxer. He starts to figure things out. Then now all of a sudden – Connor's stretching and missing. Connor's, you know, he's having trouble finding him. Floyd is counter, counter, counter. And then by the end, again, if you're talking about a scenario of a finish, I could see a situation where you've got a tired Connor McGregor against the ropes. You know, I can't see a situation where Floyd just lands clean to the chin and Connor's face down on the canvas. I just, I mean, maybe I'm off base because I'm an MMA guy. Right. I can't see that in 100 years.
Especially the bigger guy, the guy that just looks so much bigger. And we're not seeing – it's not the same Floyd. But to go to that point, and this is what I was thinking about earlier, you know, when those first early rounds when we need to see the most coming out of Connor and when I think there's that feeling out period, Connor and coming, I think, from the MMA area, and I think this is where there's some things that maybe are – better in the terms of what MMA fighters have to do to prepare as opposed to a boxing, there's more variables in an MMA fight. They don't know what to expect, so they're used to thinking outside of the box. They're used to breaking down their opponent in such a different way because they want to come up with a strategy that's going to counter anything that they've been able to see. And I think coming into this with the MMA mindset, they're going to come up with some game plan. They're going to find some way to just confuse Floyd those first few rounds, or at least the first couple rounds. I don't think he's going to have that answer because I think these guys are so used to it. Floyd and those guys, they come in, they study the film, they study whatever, but it's still boxing. It's just punching. Where Connor and those guys, they look at these opponents and they're sitting there like, God, the guy might come in, he might try to take me down the ground. I don't know. Maybe he's going to work feints and then bring a knee. Maybe he's going to do all these things. They're so used to thinking of so many different
scenarios.
Maybe
he's shooting right off the bat. I mean, you're right.
There's so many other scenarios
that
they're so used to doing that they're going to come up with some. I'm so more in the belief that his camp is going to come up with a strategy that's going to confuse Floyd those first couple rounds when the matters the most, than what Floyd's going to do to them, because Conor already knows what to expect. One, he's in. He took half those weapons, half the things that he used to have to worry about. He doesn't have to worry about
it
anymore.
He called it a quarter of a fight.
You know,
it's a quarter of a fight.
It's a quarter of a fight to him. So his camp's like, holy shit. So we only have to worry about this, this, this. But what he doesn't know is, excuse me, is that we're so used to gameplay and all this other stuff. They're going to start looking at, all right, well, what are the dangers that we need to look at? It's his hands. It's his speed. He's backing up. All right, how do we attack that? And then you're going to have these minds that are so used to breaking down bigger, more elaborate things, and I guarantee they're going to come up with something. That's going to be that if factor, that little X factor that they're just going to come in, and they're going to have something. And if that's enough to throw Floyd off the first two or three rounds and Connor's able to do some damage, maybe catch him with the uppercut, maybe catch him with the left a couple times, Floyd's going to go down dramatically fast. When it comes – not going down to the mat, but just – he's going to wear out sooner.
Yeah.
He's going to be expending more energy because all of a sudden it's not going to be the same fight that he thinks. And that's what Connor's team has to do to win, is to confuse Floyd, make it not feel like a boxing match, find some way to confuse him and just take him out of it. Like I said, clinch him, punch his arms,
yep.
Punch something, do something
that's
to wear out
it.
His body parts to where it's not the same boxer that you're getting late rounds Floyd, somehow early round Floyd, and whether that's even just making him think more so he's expending more energy and he's tired, because that shit's for real. You get up their head and the guy's all of a sudden he's not calm and cool. He's going to be burning through all of his energy, and who knows what happens.
So I think you're dead right on all this. So here's the interesting thing that also came to my mind today was, you know, Floyd actually said, like, and he said this a couple times on the way, he's like, I'm the one that made this happen. I made
right.
this fight happen. And, that's arguable, I guess. But, I mean, he certainly, I'm sure he had a lot to do with it. You know, he's certainly involved in it and made it happen. But I started to think today, and I hadn't thought this until today. I don't know why today it struck me. I feel like Floyd is almost in a no-win situation here.
Besides that big-ass paycheck.
Well, that's the thing. Excise the big-ass paycheck. So, at the end of the day, is this all about money? Because with what Floyd said, with what we just finished talking about, that if this thing goes to a decision, which is how he normally wins, if it goes to a decision, I think it's all hail Conor McGregor. This son of a
yeah.
bitch, look what he did. And if Conor wins, I mean, obviously, oh, my God. I mean, the history of combat sports has changed. It's amazing. But, I mean, anything short of Floyd coming in and just destroying Conor is kind of a loss for him, right? So is it at the end of the day, is it just those, what, $300 million or whatever it is going to make? Is that what this is really about? Because I do feel like I don't want to say a no-win situation, but I just feel like there's – because we've talked – the whole time – I feel like the whole time we've been building up to this fight, we've been talking about – well, if Conor loses, how does that impact his stardom? How does that impact his UFC run? How does that impact his marketability? And blah, 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 blah. Of course, because we cover MMA. And today, I guess, was the first day, maybe because it was the first day I had been with Floyd or whatever. It was just, how the hell does he turn out after this? Because I just, unless he just comes, I mean, if he comes in and knocks out Conor in the second round, now you go, God damn, Floyd Mayweather's a G. But even then, you could just be like, well, of course he knocked out the MMA fighter in the second round. It's not his sport. You know,
right.
I almost feel like he's in a no-win situation, although, as you said, it's hard to call anything a no-win situation when there's a couple hundred million on the
right.
line.
Right. I mean, and the only thing with that, I mean, even if he did somehow finish Conor, you know, there's all the likelihood that, oh, let's give him another shot. Let's give him another shot. Let's see if we can make more money again.
You think if he dropped him early or finished him early, he could do it again?
Or – maybe not if he drops him early.
Yeah.
But you never know. I mean, I could see just if, I mean, if you're going to make $300 million off a guy, you don't think that you can make at least another $150 million?
Yeah.
If you fight him
again?
I don't
think it would be as big the second time. Unless, if Conor wins,
right,
then the rematch would be insane.
But I have thoughts about that. I think the only reason that one probably would happen is the fact that they would make large bank again. But we see the same thing happen before when he's like, oh, I'm going to give you a rematch, and then he doesn't give the rematch. I could see Conor taking his fucking huge paycheck and saying, thank you very much. Yeah, I'll give you a rematch someday. I beat the greatest of them all. I'll get back to you. Right now I'm going to go do some movies. You wait your turn, sir. You wait your turn. But it's such a big paycheck. It'd be almost like all of us would be like, oh, you got to give it to him now. We're right. itching for it, itch for him. But I could see the mind in him thinking, no, let me go do some movies. Let me go do whatever. You just stew on it. I'm going to take my $300 million or whatever. And I'm going to do it. No, you wait, sir. You wait. You're 49-1. You just wait, sir. Oh. And maybe the only reason I could see him maybe going back and running it back is for that money, but I could totally see him pulling a dick move and saying, fuck you. I'm going to go walk away and do whatever. Maybe I don't need a fight again. I'm $300 million richer or whatever.
So the,
and what, then just dicking and never giving the rematch.
So what's the best? All right, so what's
he
the best situation?
He never gave fucking Jose a rematch, and we know that that was a fucking – that was a lucky shot. It was a precise shot. It was badass. But why have you not fucking ran that back? Or fought other guys that are along the lines that deserve to
Habib,
get that fight.
Tony Ferguson.
Because of the fucking money.
Yeah.
So he's going to make such bank right now. The only reason I think he would actually give the rematch is because he would make another huge payday. Not as big. But then again, that's just saying, like, even if he wins. But there's no guarantee that Floyd would do it back unless Floyd's like, fuck it, why not? I want to come back again. But if he gets it, that's 50-0. Ride out into the sunset and be able to walk away with another final big paycheck.
What's the best situation for Floyd? I think the only way that Floyd – I think the because if Floyd starches him early, then you just go, it was an 0-0 guy. He never deserved to be in there in the first place. If Floyd goes to decision, he's already said he views that as a loss. I think the only way Floyd comes out of this, like, better than he goes into it is if he does get rocked, if he does get tested, and then he scores, like, a – 7th, 8th, 9th round TKO after being hurt early.
I just don't see a TKO, especially if he's getting to get rocked early.
Right.
I don't think he's going to have it in him left to do it. I could see him getting rocked early and pulling out the decision win.
So then it's a no-win situation for him.
I still don't think it – I don't really see it as – yeah, I don't see it as like – I'm like, he might say, but I mean, he's been like, yeah, I'm sad I didn't get the decision, but hey, at the end of the day, it's a W. I'll take it. I fought the great – you know, the best MMA guy that's out there right now. I'm not too upset about it.
Hashtag you know? Girl collection.
Yep. I mean, I just don't see. I just don't see it as being too big of a loss for him. If it goes to decision, I think he would be pretty happy to get the decision and get that huge paycheck. It's not going to hurt his legacy. It's not going to hurt anything. He's still going to have the 50-0, and it's going to have a big old asterisk that he fought the biggest MMA star that there is right now. And I can see that. I can see him being happy and completely not thinking anything about the loss.
All right.
Or the non-finish.
Right. And for Connor, obviously he wins. He is immediately knighted and granted King of Ireland.
Yep. They will replace Trump with him.
They'll just make him President of the United States. All right. So if he wins by knockout. But let's say he gets starched. If he gets starched. If for some reason it does happen. If he gets starched, second round knockout. I mean, does it impact his UFC stardom? Or do you just go...
I think if anything, it might impact his. I've never seen him really act much. Maybe we see what it did to Ronda. Even Ronda kind of, she kind of stalled a little bit.
He
but
was
it
funny
got
in those
back
horse
on.
Racing commercials. He was actually kind of funny in those.
Well, they kept it. They kept him as Connor.
Yeah.
They kept him. His character was himself.
Right.
You know, it wasn't like he was trying to portray a role. It's not like fucking GSP trying to play the bad guy. You know, when you're just so awkward.
What was it, Batroc the Leaper or something? What the hell kind of name is that?
I don't know. But I don't think – well, I certainly don't – it won't hurt his UFC because it's not a UFC fight. So we don't see any sort of record loss there. If anything, it's only the markability on the outside. He's still going to be a huge star. And there's no shame in losing to the greatest boxer that's out there right now.
Right.
So I don't think it really ultimately hurts him in really any way. I mean, I think maybe he might lose a little bit of luster where Hollywood's like, oh, okay, you know, he's great, but he did get that loss or whatever. But, I mean, if he rides and he gets the win, I could see where they're just like, fuck, we're going to put you in every other movie. Sorry, Brad Pitt, we found the new man, you know. But if he does lose, I could see where they're just like, hey, whatever, we'll get back to him. We want to use him. We know he's very popular. We're going to use him. They just won't be clamoring hand over foot to get him when he's the hottest thing, because I mean, they're all just, that's just a, it's a momentum. You know, if you got the star clout and everybody's looking at it, I mean, he will always be, he'll be a star, but his luster will go down a little bit if he does get that loss. But as for hurting him in UFC and the MMA world, not at all. I don't think it affects at all. I mean, you're still going to have people clamoring to fight him, because still when he gets back to the MMA pay grade, if he ever does decide to go back, which is a question right there. I mean, like, if you make $300 million or whatever, $100 million, even if you make $100 million, just small chump change, $100 million, you don't even need to fight then unless you really, really want to. There's no loss in this for Connor. Even if he gets a loss, there's nothing to lose out of this.
I think it would be so amazing if somehow he parlayed, like, if he were to win here,
right,
and he parlayed it into some kind of boxing title fight, whatever title fight it is,
right,
and were to somehow win that fight and then just call it a career and walk away and having been a sport in two divisions, two sports, and never fucking defending one title once. I think that would be there would be some kind of funny shtick there. So, all right. I want to share something else. So here's the flip side of all this, man. The fight talk is the fight talk, and that's what we really live more about. But there's the business talk too. And the interesting thing is that this fight is not a sellout. Now, some people are making a big deal out of that. And I kind of see it a little bit of both ways, and we'll get into that in just a moment. But I asked both Leonard Ellerbe and Floyd Mayweather what they thought about the fact that this fight was not a sellout, and here's the answers that they had.
Leonard, a lot's being made of ticket sales so far for the event that it's not a sellout when people thought it would be. What's your take on where ticket sales stand right now and why this event isn't sold out?
Okay, first off, let me get – I'm actually tired of hearing that question, because right now we have over $60 million in the box office. And you tell me what part of that remotely looked like ticket sales are slow. This isn't the damn Rolling Stones concert. That's the only thing that sells out in seconds. And we're talking about, you know, when we're talking about tickets go from $500 to $10,000, you know, that's an expensive ticket, you know. So you have every CEO from every major company, you know, guys, it takes time for them to plan and get it together. The fact of the matter is that we have over $60 million in the box office right now, which is more than double any other live gate that's ever been done. The fight that they have on the 16th of September next month. Our fight right now, we've got more in the box office right now, double than what they will have. And again, we're not talking, you know, a $2 or $3 million gate. You know, all these record-breaking events and the numbers that are associated with it, all are because of Floyd Mayweather. A little guy who's soaking wet, 147 pounds. You know what I'm saying? It's broke all these records. That's what's wrong with boxing today. You guys always complaining and looking for shit to complain about when there's nothing there. That's the reason why we can't be innovative. You know, that's what Floyd Mayweather has done differently from anybody else. You know what I'm saying? He's thought outside the box. Someone said to me, something about tickets on sale at Costco. I'm like, we don't have nothing to do with that. But when you think about it, is that a bad thing? opening this thing up to a housewife in Desmond, Idaho, Iowa, Kansas, somebody who would normally be able to have access to our fight. Is that a bad thing for it to be accessible in Costco? That's what's wrong with boxing right now. Everyone wants to operate in this little small circle. And that's why this little guy over here at 147 pounds will go over making $1 billion in this fight, because he's been able to think outside of the box. Everybody's operating in this little thing. You know, times change. You got to think outside the box. Having tickets, and again, Ticketmaster chose to do that. And oh, by the way, the largest place where you can go buy anything in the whole entire world.
Leonard weighed in earlier on this, but with you being the promoter, are you disappointed at all that the fight's not a sellout yet?
Our fight is doing unbelievable numbers. When I say unbelievable, we're up high in the numbers. The pay-per-view numbers will be unbelievable, and we will have a sold-out crowd.
Yes.
I'm not worried about that at all.
And we're going to blow past our previous record, as I stated earlier.
And my previous record is?
$72 million.
Yes.
So Ellerbe and Floyd Mayweather said, listen, no problem here. And I kind of see that. I mean, the numbers that they're tossing out there, and again, it's kind of like when we talk about the growth of the UFC around the globe, and people say, oh, but look at the ratings here in the United States. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. You're talking about a really small piece of the pie. Yes, it's a metric to use, but you're talking about a really, really tiny piece of the pie, and I feel like that's kind of what's going on here, too, that, you know, these ticket sales that everybody's looking at. I mean, obviously, the seats are just insane. I mean, the prices are just ridiculous. And, yes, it's not a sellout yet, but it's probably a pretty small metric to use to try to judge interest in the fight as a whole. You could definitely hear it in Leonard Ellerbe's voice, man. He's tired of talking about it. He's pissed off about it. And, you know, there was a story that came out the other day. Kevin Ioli, I think, was actually the one that wrote it, that, you know, tickets are available at Costco, and they were kind of taking a hit on that as kind of a joke, like, ah, what do you got tickets available at Costco for? But, hey, it's just one more place for tickets. So, I don't know, Cold Coffee, I mean, when you talk about the fact that they're selling pay-per-views all over the world, they're selling TV rights all over the world, I mean, is it alarming to you that this thing's not a sellout with $10,000 tickets?
That's crazy. $10,000 tickets. I mean, no, because, I mean, especially, and you talked about this earlier, nobody knew what else was going to be there. Who wants to pay $10,000 for one fight, ultimately?
Right.
I mean, now I think if you had the proper selling.
Oh, but come on, ain't nobody buying. You think any of those fights they announced are making you go.
But it's still, if you know that you're paying $10,000, now you know that there's this crazy spectacle and two title fights, it does help.
That's true.
It does help a little bit, even though I don't know anything about all the different weight classes. There's way too many fucking weight classes in this thing. The super, super duper lightweight, jumbotron heavyweight division. But you're right. I don't know. I think, but even in some of the UFC fights, you know, some of the ticket prices are so overinflated that it doesn't surprise me in that sense that there are tickets asking that much.
It's crazy.
But it is a little surprising that it's not a sellout because it's not the biggest arena,
no,
by any means. But it didn't help that, you know, at this point nobody knew anything outside of the fact.
Just ridiculous on those ticket prices too. Ioli was saying today when I was sitting there talking to him that, like on I guess on some of the higher end tickets, the Ticketmaster fee was like $450.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
Now, granted, if you're paying $10,000 for a seat to do anything, you probably don't give a shit about $450. But that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a sham when it comes to the Ticketmaster thing where it's a percentage of the ticket price.
It should just be a fee, right? It should just be a
it's
flat fee.
It's all automated.
Fee. Right?
It's an automated system.
Thank you, man.
Thank you very much. It's not like it used to. Like, I actually worked for Ticketmaster way, way back in the day.
Did you really?
For like a minute. Yeah, a long, long time ago. I worked like a bazillion jobs. But it was like you're doing the same fucking shit. It's all automated. Like,
right.
We would call and do whatever, you know, and that was back when you used to call in. You can actually order tickets.
Oh, yeah.
I think you still do that, but most people, I think, just do it online. But, yeah, you just call them like, oh, okay, what's the show
like,
you want to do?
I get it. They want to have a fee. Like,
but
listen, man,
it's
our software.
It's like $25,
it's
$35, whatever, just blank, whatever. Even that, who wants to pay a $35 fee if you're, like, at a, you know, if it's a $60 ticket? That would be ridiculous. It's like a $3 fee.
Exactly.
You know, that makes sense.
What
so
makes it any difference than a $10,000 ticket? Why shouldn't that just be a $3
fee,
too? It's the same process.
Same process.
You're just processing a purchase and issuing a ticket. It's so fucking ridiculous, dude.
Fuck you, Ticketmaster.
Yeah, man. What was
choke
it?
On a dick.
Wow. Strong. Was it like Pearl Jam that came out against Ticketmaster or whatever?
Could be.
I don't know.
I think they
was
particularly shoved the dick in Ticketmaster's mouth.
Wow. They're just getting graphic. Kids. Kids, by the way.
Oh, man. NSFW after the fact.
all
by
right.
the way, if you've already been listening to this is not safe for work.
All right. Let's see. A couple other things we'll talk about. If you're a hardcore MMA Roadshow listener, you've already heard the interview with Dave Schaller. We had a great conversation with him, but kind of like we've done lately with like Dana White, with Joe Carr, you know, we took little bits and pieces of the interview. We made some videos out of it as well. So you got to hear all the audio first, but we will have Dave Schaller on the Rise of Conor McGregor coming out, I think, on Monday. What is that? August the 14th. I think that's the current plan. The video's done. We just finished it up today. And I kind of wanted to just release it today, to be honest with you. But Abby Subban, did a phenomenal job with the edit. Of course, this was the interview that that I did with Dave Schaller and that Cole Coffey shot. So the video looks good. I think the edit's fun. I don't know. I think you guys are going to like it. So hopefully you guys dig it again. Some of you, if you're a hardcore listener, you've already heard the audio. But, I mean, just having the visual and the nice B-roll in there and everything, I think it makes it like a whole new product. So please, when that comes out, definitely check it out. I think you're going to like it. All right, so tomorrow morning, Conor McGregor, we get the workout. It was supposed to be Wednesday, as we said earlier. It's tomorrow instead. Tomorrow afternoon. Thankfully, yeah. We can sleep in a little bit.
I was like, "Come on, please."
Yeah, it's for a non-fight week. We're working kind of late tonight on Thursday night, but let me just ask your expectations. Here's the whole deal: before these workouts were announced, you and I were talking like, "Man, this is going to be a dead week. We got to figure out what we can do. Let's see if we can go get like." 2 minutes of Conor McGregor working out.
Right.
You know, maybe interview John Kavanaugh, maybe interview Owen Roddy. You know, let's do something. Let's start building towards the super fight. And then they announced the open workouts, and we're like, okay, cool, sorted.
Yep.
I'm not going to lie. I was pretty surprised by the announcement because, again, those first few rounds, the element of surprise, Floyd Mayweather not being able to know exactly what's coming on the other side of the ring, I think that is the advantage that Conor has in this fight if you're looking for an advantage. I think that's the advantage. So going into tomorrow, knowing it won't be quite the madhouse that it was today because the UFC runs a little bit tighter ship and they'll have in the Performance Institute, I'm sure they'll have things lined up there. What are your expectations going in? Because, if I'm Conor McGregor, I don't want to show you shit.
Right.
I don't want to – I mean – I definitely don't. Right. I don't think I want to hit pads. I think I'd hit a bag. I think I'd hit bags. I definitely don't think I want to hit mitts. I might do more cardio and movement. I mean, he's done open workouts for the UFC where it's more about being flowy and playing touch butt in the park or whatever. What do you expect?
Yeah.
I'm not expecting to see a whole lot of boxing, and if we see a lot of actual boxing. I'll be honest. I'll be shocked.
Yeah. I mean, he might – I can see where the fact that Floyd didn't, that maybe Conor's like, hey, I'm not afraid to show you some. Maybe I will hit some mitts. But probably not. Probably won't show that. Maybe he might even just go that route and say, well, he didn't do it. I'm not going to do it. But I could see him working a bag. He's always been impressive hitting the bag. I don't think they have any other really boxing setup up there. I think they just have heavy bags.
Yeah.
And it's kind of different because if I remember right, the boxing ring is tucked in that corner.
It is.
So it's going to be even less spot for us camera guys to kind of work around it. So maybe they might even say, hey, can you do other stuff that is more camera friendly? So maybe we won't even see him in the ring, which would maybe make it easier so he doesn't have to hit mitts. So he can just work the bags and the cameras can wrap around the heavy bags.
Right.
But I could see him doing some cardio stuff. Stretching, maybe just doing whatever hitting the little baton things or something.
The pool noodles.
The pool noodles that he likes to do every once in a while. I could see him following the same vein and make it more of a cardio warm-up workout. You know, again, I think a lot of times when we saw these other open workouts, typically in the MMA, they're peaking. They've already peaked. They're right at the peak, right before the fight. I think now with us still being 2 weeks out, they're controlling better when it comes like what they want to expend, what energy they want to expend.
Because they're still probably trying to ramp up.
Because they're still trying to ramp up.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think it's probably going to be more cardio intensive, working the bag, so he gets a good workout on his arms. But I don't think it's gonna be too outside of what we saw today, where it was more like a nice little warm up. Work in the bags, maybe then, do some stretching, do some other little stuff, then cool them down, and then fucking talk to people. Unless they try to do the talk beforehand, like happened with today, which was just different.
I'm interested to see. It's going to be...
Should be good, but I think it'll be good. I think it'll probably be about the same length.
I'm more excited about what we'll get from Conor in terms of interview stuff than I am for what we had on the World Tour. I think the World Tour, by the end, the being on stage and the over-the-topness of it, I was kind of worn out by the end of it. So I'm kind of anxious. I felt like we got better conversation out of Floyd Mayweather today than we had from the World Tour, so I'm kind of anxious to get some good conversation out of Conor McGregor. As good as you can get with, you know, 100 media people there,
yeah,
or whatever. So.
Yeah, that's the key.
We'll see how it goes. All right, well, 2 weeks of build-up. Next week we'll have some conference calls, so there'll be less, you know, kind of touching feeling kind of stuff, but we'll still have some more conversation about that. And that's kind of one reason I've been hesitant to get too far into this fight, you know, up until now, because I felt like there was so much going on. Hell, even this week, dude, Mexico City feels like it was like a lifetime ago, man. That was just a couple of days ago, and I feel like just
was it only a couple of days ago?
Yeah, it's fucking Thursday, man. I left there on Sunday, no sleep. Sergio Pettis did pick up the big win over Brandon Moreno down there. We have full coverage of all of that. Great performance by Sergio Pettis.
Yeah, he did. He looked good.
He looked phenomenal after a tough first round from Brandon Moreno. Sergio Pettis battled back and looked phenomenal there. Nico Price was one of the stories of the week. That guy is high energy, man. I love that guy. He's quickly becoming one of my guys. Tough to see him beat Alan Jobine. Alan's a guy that I saw fight as an amateur and tough enough here in Vegas, and then actually called his first two pro fights up in Tachi Palace fight. So, known that guy forever. So, you hate to see him lose. But Nico Price, man, the energy on that guy.
Super
just
impressive.
The personality on that guy. And then, incredibly impressive. The story I'm really looking forward to following up, and I think Fernanda Praches is actually working on this right now, but Humberto Bondanai came in, picked up $50,000 in that win over Martin Bravo, 26-second knockout, and just a touching story as well, man. The guy, his dad was sick, but basically his dad insisted that he move to the United States and train alongside his buddy Chito Vera, and he got the call and on short notice to come in. And basically, as I understand it, he had to make a decision, which was either fight in the UFC or go see his ailing dad. And his dad was like, do not come back here. You better take this opportunity. And his dad passed away before the fight. So
that's hardcore.
Crazy stuff, man. Sam Alvey picked up the win over Rashad Evans. Sam Alvey called out Vitor Belfort after. I loved it. That dude is fun to watch. The fight wasn't that great. And I don't know what you do with Rashad Evans at this point. Tough, man. Tough. But this was a great card, top to bottom. Nobody was looking forward to it. It ended up being phenomenal. Dustin Ortiz, incredible 15-second win over Hector Sandoval, which is tough to see him lose. I like that kid. The intensity that he has is insane. Dustin Ortiz was so happy afterwards, though. Hani Yaya with the Kimura win. Just so many finishes on the card. It was a fun card, and that was like 5 days ago, bro. It feels like another lifetime. It was fun. We got back to the hotel late. This was sad. I sat in the backstage area the whole time because obviously I was there by myself, so I was doing the backstage interviews. I had wanted to go. My plan was to go out for the first fight and to go out for the last fight because at that point there's no interviews to be done. But Mike Roach, a photographer,
this kills me,
had $25,000 worth of gear stolen in the arena. And from what
inside
I understand,
job.
Yeah, inside job. From what I understand, in like the first 5 minutes of being there, like basically he walked in, set his gear down in his workspace, walked to the office to go ask a question, to get some clarification on something, came back, and the gear was gone. So upon hearing that, I decided that there was no way in hell I was going to leave the press room and leave my – and granted, the press room is usually a pretty secure area, but my computer would be there. My camera would be there. So I sat back in the back, and I watched this whole thing on TV. But, man, it was a fun card. I wanted to get out there, but never even made a cage side because, poor Mike, man, had all that gear stolen.
That fucking sucks. That's just guts me, man. Great, great dude. But and you talk about the secure areas of, like, the media room because, you know, there's sometimes, like, the security doesn't know. They don't care. They try to look at credentials. They try to do whatever. But you go overseas, and that shit goes out the window. And to think that it happened so quickly, I would probably do the same thing. I would stay right next to my gear, and it just sucks. He's a great guy, and I'm sure he had insurance on it. But, you know, even then, there might be small things he didn't. And just the fact to have to deal with that. And, you know, I heard he stuck around the whole time, the whole night,
the type of character that he is, dude.
He was just assumed it would come back.
Literally, if your gear is stolen, like, there's no reason for you to be there. Like, you can just turn around and go home and be like, F this, I'm going to go have a beer and I'm not working tonight.
Yeah.
That shows you the type of character he has. He literally sat there all night long and was like, I know it's going to turn up, and when it turns up, I'm going to start working right away, whenever that may be. First fight, last fight, whatever it may be, I'm going to start working. So, gutted for that, dude, man.
Yeah, can't believe. Hopefully they get down to it, but it seems like it was like a inside-ish job that probably happened before, and they probably won't see it again, but I don't know.
As long as we're pouring out some beer for the homies, can we just say somebody else I'm gutted for? Dave Mandel.
Oh, shit, yeah, that's
laid
right
off from Sure Dog, man.
That sucks.
That dude.
That sucks, big dog.
That dude.
Big balls. I forgot about that until you just
Dave
said it again.
Dave Mandel.
That fucking sucks.
Has been on the grind for years, man. And, you know, we always kind of talk about, like, the competition that we have in the back, but also the camaraderie. I mean, we're all trying to beat each other. We're all trying to get the best shot, the best position, the best, you know, whatever. We're all competitive, you know what I mean? We all are competitive. But at the end of the day, there is a fellowship among all of us, you know, especially the ones that are always on the road. You know, we see Casey and Esther all the time.
Right.
We see Dave Mandel all the time. Right. You know what I mean? And honestly, among, you know, that's probably the most traveled crew. I mean, Scott Peterson does a lot, especially locally, but not necessarily internationally.
Yep.
But that's, you know, that's kind of the crew that you could always count on. And, you know, I guess they had to make some changes over there at Sure Dog, and
that
he got laid off.
Sucks. I forgot about it. That just brings it all back. Yeah, now I'm pissed off again. Because, yeah, I mean, he's one of the guys that I see back there, like, nonstop. He works his ass off. He's a talented shooter. He's a good photog. And hell of a fun guy to be working with on a fight night. And we don't even work for
humor,
the same fucking outlet. But, you know, we're back there. We're doing the thing. I mean, I respect the hell out of that dude, and hope somebody picks him up. And if there's anything I could do in some way to help that guy out, I definitely would, because that he's a top notch dude, and I hate to fucking hear that stuff happens. But it's a reality. It's a reality of the sport and any business, not even just MMA or anything. I mean, cuts and things happen. We've seen that happen to us. We've seen it happen to other people, and. My heart goes out to him. And now I'm going to have to reach out to him because I completely spaced on it. So I'm glad you said something. I feel like a shit that I haven't reached out yet. So.
Well, I tried to give his name to USA Today Sports Images, which is, you know, not our company, but you know, one of our parent companies that provides all of our images. So, I don't know. Hopefully they can get him on board there. Last thing, Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. I got to say, I'm still loving it. I'm still enjoying it.
Yeah, still
this
fun.
This was a tough one, man, for me. The two guys I was really most interested in, and it ended up being a pretty good night of fights. The first fight
– jinxed them.
The first fight was not so great. Shelton Grace defeating Everett Sims was not a great fight. The rest of them were a lot of fun. But, yeah, Donovan Freelo and Peter Pettis were the two guys I was most interested in, and they both lost. So that kind of sucked. Freelo did get engaged afterwards, which is kind of cool. There were some clips of that. He got engaged in the tough gym. So that was kind of cool for him. But I hate to see him lose. And then Peter Pettis – I still think he's a physical talent, but Julio Arce looked phenomenal. So still enjoying those. There's three of them left. Crazy, because there's going to be one on the week of Mayweather McGregor. So that's going to be a fun fight week.
Yeah, maybe they'll have some interesting people there.
There you go.
Watch it or something. Since maybe people are already coming into town or something.
Couple
maybe
VIPs
it'll be
in
the
town.
hot ticket. You want to get your fight week started with a little MMA? Come to Dana White's Contender Series.
You might be right. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that.
You never know.
All right. Well, listen, that wraps it up. A lot of Mayweather-McGregor talk. But, hey, man, like I said, I think the circus is now officially in town. So you can probably expect a little bit more of this talk next week and a hell of a lot of it on fight week. Still don't know if we're going to be there or not. We don't have our official confirmations yet, but
it was nice getting the recognition, even though I can't remember the young lady's name, that when we were checking in, you were like, "Oh, I miss my man Ken Athwart." She's like, "Oh, you were on the tour." I was like, "Finally, some recognition." And that was my hope. That was my hope.
Yep.
Even though she did, I think you said my name. So I think, but she
I did, but she
out.
Recognized you right
but
away.
But she recognized me, and I was thinking like, well, please remember that. So when it comes to fight time, you know, like, hey, we did the tour. We covered the tour. Make sure our outlet's good.
So
you know,
hopefully we'll be there.
Hopefully we'll be there. We'll be there.
We'll share it. If not, we'll just do a hell of a job covering it from the house. That's how we'll do. All right, listen. Conor McGregor is on tap tomorrow. We'll get that done.
You know what's on tap right now? Some PBR.
Couple of award-winning PBRs.
Got to get them freebies.
We got to do
it. Or
is
this the freebies?
I think this is a freebie, but let's just start another round. let's do what we do. In the meantime, seriously, thanks for listening.